You're listening to the iFilmmaker Podcast, the show where we learn and grow in the freelance filmmaking industry. I am your host, Ariel Martinez.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez, and on this episode, I have my friend Fernando Gomez. We're discussing gear. This is going to be a fully gear-centric episode. Very excited for this, and I could, as you guys know, I can talk about gear all day, for days, really. But on this episode, we are discussing the recent releases of this month. We're talking about the Ursa Mini 12K, the Canon EOS R5, and the R6. And then we're also talking about the Sony A7S Mark III. So very excited about these episodes. But for those of you that are new here, I just want to remind you, I just want to let you guys know that we do have a Facebook group over on Facebook. Just go to iFilmmaker Facebook group and you'll be able to find us there. Tune in over to Patreon for our daily vlogs and videos that we put out there all the time. Sharing, I guess, my background into my business and whatnot and what I do. I'm putting exclusive content over on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/iFilmmaker. You can also find the link to that on the show notes for this episode. And if you haven't already done so and gone to check out Jackson Kingsley's Video Mastery Seminar, it's free. It's completely free. I have a link to that on the show notes for this episode. It's 40 minutes of free information where my friend Jackson Kingsley, he's a great cinematographer and just a great freelancer and a good guy too. He's revealing his top 10 secrets to video business success. It's very informative. It's really, really good. I've seen it myself. Just good information. Check that out with the link over in the show notes for this episode. You can look at that there. And lastly, just want to remind you guys that we are on every single platform, Spotify, iTunes, but more specifically, if you're on iTunes, if you're listening to this on iTunes, we'd appreciate a review. Check out this episode. If you like it, great, awesome. If not, let me know in the comments or in the show notes for this episode what you didn't like, or talk to us over on the Facebook group. Let us know there. But we definitely appreciate those 5-star reviews. It really helps us in the rankings, and share this with your friends and whatnot. But anyways, with all that out of the way, let's go ahead with our conversation with Fernando Gomez. We're talking about all these cameras, gear, and we're just going to nerd out right now.
Boom.
All right. Cool. And I'll record an introduction when I go ahead and post this.
All right.
So, Fernando, thanks for coming back on the podcast, man. It's been a while since you've How you been?
I've been good, man. Been good. Been busy, luckily, thankfully. But
always a good thing in these days.
Yeah, man, for real.
So you and I have been back and forth on social media, text messaging about all these cameras that have come out, and it seems like July has just been an incredible month for cameras and basically our industry. Our choices have just gotten so much bigger. Like we have so many options now.
Yeah, man.
So many ways that we can go, and I wanted to discuss a couple of those releases that happened.
It's been pretty record-setting if you think about it, with everything that's come out this past month. And I mean, like, Sony waited just to the end of the month, just to like put their footprint down.
This is not a footprint that Sony just did. They put a stamp on it, man.
They dropped a nuke.
Oh, we're definitely going to get to that. Let's do it in order, all right?
For sure.
Let's go in order. Let's start with Canon. So Canon releases the Canon EOS R5 and the R6, right? One of them is more, one's a lower scaled version of that. And the, the R5, obviously the main headline features is 8K RAW.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that. 8K raw in a small body like that. And then, you have the 4K up to 120 frames per second And I think that that's still 8-bit, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
So that was very impressive that Canon was able to release that at that level. And everyone, it basically took everyone by surprise.
Oh, for sure.
Every single person. Actually, let me correct that. So 4K, 120 frames per second in 10-bit.
Oh, there you go.
So that's...
Yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah. 120 frames per second in 10-bit. Mm-hmm. And so all these speculations about the overheating. So I started going back and forth with people on social media where I'm like trying to defend Canon here. Because Canon also released these cameras with notices saying this camera can overheat in 20 minutes in 8K RAW and 4K 120. And I'm like... All right, first of all, I'm not shooting 120 frames per second for more than 20 minutes at a time, right? I mean, I don't know who's shooting that more than 100.
I can't see, unless, I don't even know. I can't imagine what you would be shooting for that long at 120 frames per second.
Right, right. But, okay, so that was my argument, right? My argument was at least Canon lets us know. All right, fine. Understandable. 8K RAW internally for 20 minutes at a time. Okay, fine, sure. If you have that one project that you just need fine detail, if you need to do a product shot, if you need to do whatever it is that you just need extra resolution, you have the option.
Yeah, and those are just one-off shots. I can't imagine.
Yeah,
like, could you imagine any documentary shooter shooting for more than 20 minutes in 8K, like an interview in 8K, you know what I mean?
No. And as soon as I saw that, you know, the first thing I said is like, okay, well, I will never interview with this camera. I can't. There's no way. But even then, well, first of all, let me back that up. I would never do an interview in 8K, let alone RAW, right? Yeah. So, and in my head, I'm thinking, at least the 4K 24, it'll be perfectly fine for that.
For sure.
45 megapixel images, you know, which is fantastic. That's always very welcome. It's a really, really solid camera. Yeah. Then fast forward. Oh, I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
Oh, no. I mean, it's funny because I was like, I was one of those like pessimistic ones, like, oh my God, 8K. Why?
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. I was going back. Like,
why? And then I was like, okay, like, I get what they're doing. They're pushing the technology. Yeah. They're saying it's here, we can do it, right? Obviously it needs work.
Yeah.
Because 20 minutes, you know, recording time.
Dude,
RAW.
I was, but
if you're like a landscape shooter or something, you know, if you're out there like shooting for National Geographic, like 20 minutes to get a really nice landscape shot, you know, it's incredible. Like you, it's like, there's your resolution. You're going to throw that anywhere now.
Yeah.
20 minutes, you're going to be fine. You got to swap out a battery, bring a lot of batteries, you know, but I mean, not even batteries. I think it's just cause that's what it only limits you to, right? It's not even a battery problem. I mean, but
it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. One of the things that I was saying, cause people online were brutal with this camera.
I know.
They were saying, who needs 8K RAW? Right. And my argument's like, then don't use the 8K RAW.
That's the problem with people. Like, everyone's like, oh, why do we need this? But I mean, if you don't need it, don't use it.
Exactly.
But it's there, you know?
I mean, I understand what they're saying. I understand what they're saying, but I just think that they're approaching it wrong. Yes, the 8K RAW was a little bit of both. I love the fact that they pushed the technology that they're telling other companies, listen, this is where we're heading at. Mm-hmm. The next camera comes out and doesn't have 4K 120, it's a disappointment, you know? Yeah. Or 8K, even 6K, you know, some cameras. Look, now we have Sony cameras coming out with 6K sensors and only giving you 4K images. Mm-hmm. People are going to say, well, give us the 6K image. Let us edit with that, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, there's always going to be an issue with something. The fact that they're coming out with 8K, but not just 8K. If they would have just done 8K normal, it would have been a lot people, I don't know what people would be saying, but the fact that they're giving us 8K raw, it's great. And that's my argument. That's what I was saying, you know?
The raw,
like, it's fantastic, great. If you want to get it and just shoot 4K, then just shoot 4K. You're yeah. not obligated. It's not the only frame rate that you can use.
But there's not the uh-huh. exactly. No, I agree. Exactly. It's not the only frame rate you can use. Just because it's there doesn't mean you have to use it. I think my problem, not problem, my whole concern with it was, okay, Canon showing you we could put 8K on a camera, right?
Right.
But instead of limiting you to that functionality, be like, here, we still put 8K in a mirrorless camera, but why do you have to make it shoot raw in mm-hmm. with that time frame? You could have done like 8K in a lower data rate, like lower megabit
yeah.
rate, and try to give you more so that you could play with it more. But they're like, and at least show people, hey, we got it. And then in your next iteration, expand on it, you know?
Yeah.
Which they will. There's no doubt. But,
yeah.
you know, but then it's like you're trying to make that comeback. Canon's trying to make that comeback, but then it's just like they hit a wall. And then obviously you have all the overheating issues now. And that's a whole other story.
So, yes, let's move on to that. The overheating issues, man.
Yeah,
this is going to be equivalent. I don't know. It's not there yet, but I honestly, when I think about Canon and EOS R5 and the R6, I think of the Galaxy Note 8, right?
How? Oh my God. Dude.
Because look, man, here's the problem. When I saw, you know, after the whole thing happened, I was defending Canon. I'm like, look, man, as long it's there, you don't have to use it. Whatever. I just explained all the arguments that I made. But then I see Cinema 5D, and they put out a video about how they went on a 2-day documentary shoot. They were shooting for 2 or 3 days or whatnot, and the fact that they were only shooting 4K 24 frames per second on a normal. And I can hear the disappointment in this man's face, and I could see and hear it in his face and in his voice. Yeah. I wish I knew his name, but he had to start the video by apologizing to the people that he was shooting with because of the horrible experience that he had because he could not capture important, intimate moments that they yeah. had because the camera was overheating. At yeah. normal 4K resolution. And I'm only saying that because I'm looking at the BTS video and I see everything 4K 24 frames per second.
Yeah.
Now, if you're that disappointed, like, and you know, according to him, they were even getting, they had the fans pointing at the camera. They had to stop recording. They didn't know when it was going to allow him to record again. He had a bag of ice in a Ziploc on top of the camera because it was kept overheating. You didn't know what. This is like, hold on a second.
That it when I saw that and I saw those pictures, I didn't read the entire article, but when I saw those pictures, it hit me. It's like it the problem became more apparent, right? There's such a rush between these companies to try to get out the next best thing and the next
yeah.
best gimmick that they're overlooking a lot of things. And to me, I mean, I'm never going to touch that camera, to be honest. Like,
oh no, like, absolutely not.
And I'm a lover of Canon, everything Canon, their color science. I've always loved it, everything.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
but I don't think I'm ever touching those. And I don't. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I'm ever touching a Canon mirrorless for a long time. I have my 5D Mark IV. That's all I use for pictures, and I got my GH5, and that's it. But. But yeah, man, it's disappointing because it shows you how all these companies are just in this race to get the next best thing out. And how can, you know, you look at Canon, like this company that's like so renowned, and then you realize they must have just said, screw it.
Yeah.
We're releasing it anyways. Because how can you, after a camera recording 4K at 120, for it to overheat that much? Yeah. You render it useless for a professional, you know?
Yeah, it's man, and not only that, this is the R6 that he was using, not even the R5.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He was using the R6 and that he was having that many issues with it. Yeah. I can't even imagine the R5. Which is unfortunate. I really I think that Cinema 5D just messed them up, because when, I mean, that convinced me this camera is not usable. I would not recommend this camera for anybody. Having that many issues, and this is just regular use. This is normal camera usage. Oh man, I think Canon is gonna have to. Well, good thing they haven't started shipping. They still have time. I think they can redeem themselves. I think that if they just fix those issues and go back to the, yes, it'll overheat if you're at 120 for 20 minutes, if you're at 4K RAW, at 8K RAW for 20 minutes, etc. If they go back to that and the 4K 24, 4K 30 is perfect, no overheating, you could use it as long as you want, great. I think that they can maybe salvage a little bit of what the disaster is going to be from this camera. Yeah.
But that's going to be a hit for sure.
It's going to be a huge hit. I feel bad for the people that already pre-ordered it. I think they can get their money back. I'm not sure how that works. Depends where they got it from, but it's such a letdown, such a disappointment.
Do you know when it comes out officially?
July 30th, it looks like. It'll begin shipping July 30th. And here's another thing. Here's something that, man, and I don't make it a point, and I'm not going to say any names specifically, but these YouTubers that came out, these objective YouTubers that have come out and said nothing but good things for this camera, I can guarantee you that they...
Those are paid sponsorships, man.
Not only that, but like... They had a lot more problems shooting. After seeing that with the R6, they had a lot more issues than they claimed, right? So some of them said, yeah, there's overheating and stuff, and after a few minutes, you're good to go. That was not their experience.
No, probably not.
That was not their experience. And that's such a disappointment to see YouTubers that are not objective at all. I would rather you tell me. And some of them were outspoken. You know, I am a brand ambassador for Canon and whatever.
Yeah.
But they still downplayed the gravity that is the overheating issue. Overheating
issues. For sure. A lot of them, and that's when you could tell. And it's not just for like Canon, because I've seen it with like other camera reviews and things like that, where they fail to point out like certain things that everyone already knows. And and it's just obviously, it's a sponsored video. You know it, because they'll touch up on it. They'll be like, hey, I kind of don't like this, but I could get over it. Like, they'll brush it off just like that. And it's like, man.
No, man.
Yeah. I get it. You're trying to sell it 100%. Yeah. But that's why you got to rely on other sources and,
I'm super happy that Cinema 5D did that test that they ended. They shared their experience, their true experience. That's a lot of respect, because look, you're either loyal to the brand or you're loyal to your audience, right? It's one or the other, man. I've lost respect for a couple of YouTubers that, I mean, I cannot take their word for anything, man. And you can see it in the comments. Go to their channels. You'll see it in the comments how they're losing respect from their followers, which is unfortunate. But anyways, that's enough about the Canon debacle here. It's just a disappointing camera. Hopefully they fix it. I would love to see a world where they're competitors again in the mirrorless world, and see a very usable camera, you know, so we have options. I love the fact that we're always having options. Let's go ahead and move on to the Ursa Mini 12K.
That's the big guy.
It's so funny, because I started trolling people online after defending Canon and 8K RAW. We're like, your Ursa Mini.
Everyone was just like, oh, okay.
Man, it's true, man. Because look, again, you don't have to shoot 12K. You don't have to. Don't use it. Whatever.
But Canon said, here's 8K. Blackmagic said, hold my beer.
I know, I was going to say that. Oh, man. But it's so funny, because 12K, just thinking about it, 12K.
But here's the thing. 12K, and I've said this, I mean, this is why I completely defend 12K from Blackmagic. If it was anyone else doing it, I wouldn't defend.
Really?
It.
Okay.
Because I've seen, Blackmagic is just on another, I mean, Blackmagic, when it comes to their products, I feel there's no one out there that does it like they do. And they've been researching this stuff through and through for years already. I think before this 12K Ursa Mini, they were doing tests on the sensor. They were like researching and developing the sensor for the last 3 years. So you could tell it's like they released like the 4.6K and then went straight for, they released the G2 and then straight at it, yeah, quietly. And then the fact that, I mean, you've seen the test footage, you've seen, we know the body. The body works well. Yeah. It records to the same cards. You could tell that there's not going to be anything wrong. Like, yeah, maybe there might be something wrong with it. But the thing is that it lives in their ecosystem, and they're not playing by anyone else's rules.
Right.
They got their own Blackmagic RAW codec that's getting better and better.
Yeah.
And they have like no limitations. The only limitations are their own physical and, you know, software.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like it's weird because they don't bottleneck themselves. And that's why I
Blackmagic has been doing really good in the past several years.
Yeah.
People have been loving their 4K pocket, their 6K pocket. Yeah. Their G2 has been phenomenal. I've been salivating over the G2 for a while now.
It's great.
It's disappointing that I still think that Premiere still doesn't take it. I would need to get like a plugin to use it in Premiere. But I can see why. I mean, DaVinci is the best software out there for basically for coloring and whatnot, mm-hmm, and why professionals use it. And that's what they're catering to. You know, they want me to switch to DaVinci, which it's just hard. I Premiere is for collaborating, to keep things to where I need it, you know, yeah, I need my equipment to work with me. I don't want to change my routine for the gear that I have. So that's just been my own opinion. But, you know, if I was a DaVinci editor, even I think it still communicates well with Final Cut. I'm not sure.
Blackmagic. It's one of those. I've round tripped between Premiere and DaVinci before to color grade.
No, I mean the footage, like
Blackmagic
B-Raw footage.
I'm not sure.
Does it work well with Final Cut, or is it just DaVinci?
I haven't heard much, but I've been looking more into its Premiere use, and Premiere already supports it. And then, but there's also, I was reading recently about a third party plugin that.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I would like to take full benefit of it, but
yeah.
I mean, man. So I mean, look, and even for animators, people that do these movies that require a lot of VFX, having that much resolution is like a dream for them.
Oh, for sure, and that's exactly who this type of stuff is aimed for. It's not that this Ursa is not for your everyday shooter, for your vlogger, for your YouTuber. This is for someone like, and I mentioned this to a couple of people, and this is for someone who runs a production company and wants to completely future-proof themselves.
Yeah.
All right. Now, if you run your own production company and you have, you know, you sort of like locked down within your own ecosystem, you can run it through, you can edit through Blackmagic without having to go back and forth with editors. If you hire contractors, you get them editing on it. You know, it's not that hard to switch. It's just more of a time commitment, you know, to switch to those things. But in regards to the camera as it is, you, in my opinion, for what is it, $10,000?
$10,000, yeah.
Is that what it is? That's an incredible price.
That is a very incredible price.
That is not, if you think about it,
that's unheard of.
For a production company owner, a freelancer, a business owner, $10,000 for a camera. It is a sizable investment, but it's not that bad. You're not buying a $60,000 Red. You're not buying a $50,000 Alexa Mini, whatever. Yeah. But you're getting something that can stand toe-to-toe with all of those.
Yep.
In my opinion.
No, so. And the thing is, it's 12K at 60 frames per second. But you also have the option of shooting 8K and 6K.
Yeah, for sure.
It shoots 8K at 100 frames per second.
That's insane.
That is very insane. Yeah. Super 35 sensor.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But still, in my opinion, so I've worked in my job. We have an Ursa Mini, the first one. And it's still, to me, it's like the body's still, it's still heavier than it looks.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. So it's still like cumbersome, like lug around
one,
and stuff.
One but, disappointment though, it's that it's 14 stops of dynamic range, which is less than the G2. G2 has 15.
I saw that, yeah. But I feel like with
that's interesting.
With the RAW now, you might be able to get away with a little bit more than, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even like if I was considering getting a camera, I would probably just go with a G2 anyways, because I can shoot 4.6K at 120.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't need 12K, but maybe somebody else needs 12K. And I had some people writing me on social media, well, you're not going to buy it. Was like, well, my argument was not for me to buy it. I'm not trying to justify it to myself. Like, the fact that the industry is getting better because we have all these options is really my argument. You know, yeah. I'm not going to trash any camera, any company that tries to push the limits for our benefit. You know,
yeah.
You're trying to push limits, and they showed us that it could be done.
And let's say you're shooting, I don't know, a short film, right?
Right.
You want to get the best quality. Yeah. You're going to have to, you know, put some money down for some overhead for like,
yeah,
hard drive space and whatnot, but you can shoot 12K, deliver in 4K for like a DCP package, like for a cinema package or something, and you're gonna have amazing quality footage, yeah, and an amazing 4K beyond 4K, you know. So there's just so much to it that
at the end of the day, man, when you export all this stuff, it's gonna get processed anyways. So yeah. If you know, the 12K is not because you're gonna deliver 12K. That's another thing that people were commenting, like, when are you going to deliver 4K? It's not for you to see anything in 4K. Yeah. I mean, in 12K.
No. We barely deliver 4K as it is.
I know, so we don't. Yeah. I barely deliver 4K. Yeah. I do it out of habit more so than request. Like, I give my clients 4K final product, but sometimes they just need 1080.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
I think every time, I don't think I ever shoot in 1080 anymore. Except this one wedding that I did like a couple days ago on Saturday for a friend. And I only did that because I wanted the slow motion out of the A6600, which was atrocious, by the way. It was just so bad. Like, you know, when you push a image and depending on the quality, it starts to break down.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? When you start throwing in the saturation and contrast.
Yeah,
it's horrible. This was already breaking down before I even touched it.
Oh man.
I can see the blotches of
those artifacts
of the magenta.
Yeah,
and I can see the blotches already on the raw footage. I haven't even touched the footage yet.
God.
I'm like, oh god, this is terrible. I don't know if it's because I'm spoiled already at the 4K60, the GH5. Just yesterday, I was considering the GH5 again. Like, and I was talking to you about it.
Yeah,
I wanted to get, and that's it. I decided I'm going back to the GH5. I can't take this anymore. I need a small handheld camera that I could do small jobs with. And, you know, I get those jobs a lot too, quite often.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to lug my FS7 every time for a job that requires a quick little camera to get the thing done. But, you know, I just didn't have that camera anymore. I sold my GH5, but I was missing it, you know, so I wanted that. And so I think that's a good segue to the
beast. Camera has spoiled this, yeah.
To the beast.
The beast, the one.
The Sony A7S Mark III that we've been waiting for 5 years now, is it?
Yeah, it's been
this
5 years.
This camera, I mean, it was supposed to come out when the GH5 came out, I think.
Oh, yeah, they were not teasing, but everyone was expecting it.
Even before that, then. I think.
Yeah.
But, people were expecting it when the GH5 was announced. It was supposed to be announced. And it's funny, I made a podcast back then about it and, you know, the disappointment that was. But it's one of those better late than never type of releases. But I got to say, this has been the fastest I've ever pre-ordered a camera.
Really?
I've never pre-ordered a camera on the same day that it was announced or released. released. It's, gosh, what can I say about this? I think this, it's incredible. Let's start with the flip-out screen. Hello.
Finally.
We've been asking for a flip-out screen on the Sony Alpha camera since the A7S, the first one ever came out. Glad they finally added it here. I honestly, like, when it comes to thinking about the perfect camera, this is almost there. This is the closest to the perfect mirrorless camera that you can ask for.
To be honest, for a mirrorless camera, I don't I don't think it gets better than this.
It doesn't. This is the best right here.
Yeah.
Assuming that the video quality is up to par, which I fully assume that it's going to be, it doesn't get any better than this.
From what I've seen, it's pretty good. And here's the thing. Like, I've always been, because I've worked with a lot of Sony footage before. Not that I've shot with Sony, but I get a lot of, you know, post work with Sony, and I can't stand it. Like, oh, like with the A7S II was great, because when I saw people that were shooting in low light, I'm like, okay, perfect. Thank you for shooting with this camera, because I can work with it.
Yeah.
But it was always the color and the whole color science to it that bugged me. And I'm like, I can't do it.
Well, good news. This is coming out with the new color science that was implemented in the FX9 and the Sony Venice.
Yeah.
Same color science. This is not going to have that color science that is in any of the previous Sony Alpha cameras. This is the first mirrorless camera that's going to have that new color science as the... Actually, I'm sorry. I think the ZV-1 has it, but, you know, the bit rate is so small. The quality is not there.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up to par.
Right, but the color science, though, it's going to be that of the FX9, which is incredible.
So I saw some... I actually saw some footage already. I don't know if you've seen, you know, Potato Jet.
Yes. On yeah, that's the one that footage? You saw his skin tone.
His comparison was great.
Incredible. And I'm like, yes, that horrible magenta crap is what I'm getting now.
Horrible. I hate it.
I want that guy.
I hate it. I could tell you just by looking. If you show me like just a line of footage, I'd be like, okay, that's shot from Sony just because of the freaking magenta spill.
Yeah, that was
an icon because it's yellow.
Those magenta skin tones is just terrible. And the 8-bit color was not usable. And that's now we have 10-bit across the board. That's the best part. 10-bit at 120 frames per second. 4K.
I was still reading up on the codecs, because there's a lot, like,
there's a lot of options. You don't have to shoot. You can go down to 8-bit if you need to save space, right? Yeah. You still have the good color science, but you could go down to 8-bit. You have options. There's a lot of options here. But the fact that you have the 4K, see, I love that Sony was not even concerned about giving you a 6K sensor, 8K sensor, or 12K sensor. I love the fact that they just focused on 4K just to make it the best 4K on the market right now.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And that is amazing. That is amazing.
That's what you need. And I'm pretty sure, but I mean, what's the size of the sensor? Is it a 6K sensor?
No, it's a 4K sensor. It's the
4K, full frame.
Right. It's a full frame 4K sensor. That's why it's 12 megapixels. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Which is good for me personally. I know people are complaining that it's only 12 megapixels, but that's the reason why you're getting such a great low light performance.
But it's meant for video. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's a video camera, so that's why I'm not even going to address that here, just because I don't think it's relevant.
I mean,
here. If, 12 megapixels, to be honest, is perfectly fine for the social media pictures that I'm taking all the time. So
and if it's for social media, for things like that, but you're not going to shoot anything else. Anything bigger.
I'm not a photographer.
I do a lot of retouching work, and I'm very picky about that. Like, I could tell when I get something that's from a camera that's subpar and just not, but it's like, oh, and I always tell myself, oh man, I hope this is going like Instagram or something. They're not gonna blow this up. But you have no reason. I mean, if you need to, it's there, but you have no reason to want to go to shoot with an A7S3.
All right, so
two stills. Sorry,
the battery is the same as the new A7 III. It's that nice big battery, the same battery that I actually have on the A6600, which I just shot a wedding. I was shooting for like 3-4 hours, and I only used half the battery of it shooting for that long. So it's an incredible amount of power that comes in those batteries, and because of that, it has a bigger grip. It has a much nicer grip.
That's what I've
This is incredible.
The grip here's, I've always been like, this is just me personally, like being picky with the body. I know it has like those Sony A7s, the A7 series have a nice, pretty nice grip compared to, because even like my GH5, I wish the grip was a little bigger. I think the Sony one is a little bit bigger.
Actually, the GH5 is pretty hefty.
It's got that, but like I still wish it like protruded more, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like so. But But in my opinion, I it's just an aesthetic thing. Like, I wish that it wasn't so square.
You know what I mean? The Sony camera?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's so square.
It's funny. Like, I actually didn't like the GH5 because it was so curvy. It's so funny. It's a preference thing, it seems like.
I think
that's the only thing Canon has going for it right now is the grip. They have the best grips. Don't you have the 4?
Well,
the 5D Mark IV?
Yeah, the 5D on those, but those are like full DSLRs. Yeah,
that grip is beautiful. You know what? I haven't held. Actually, I have, but it's the best grip I think for big hands like mine is like the S1 and the S1H. Those cameras are massive. Yeah. Those cameras are massive, dude. Nice. But anyways, yeah, this has a nicer, bigger grip. There's a record button right next to the shutter button, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and it's nice.
There's a lot. I've been trying to catch up with it today. I haven't been able to read too much. Yeah, I was looking at Gerald Undone's video, and he was talking about recording codecs and. But he's basically saying he was talking about all I like shooting all intra at 600 megabits per second. That's
incredible. That's a lot, which is why this camera takes CF Express type A cards.
Right. So that's what he was saying. So unless you're going to shoot all intra, you don't need the CF Express. You can actually shoot into SD.
The best thing is that this camera actually takes in the same two dual card slots that they have. You can either put an SD card or a CF Express Type A card, which is not heard of. Like in cameras, it's either one or the other. Yeah. This camera takes both in the same slots.
That's incredible.
Which is amazing.
They killed it. Yeah.
And so you could use, if you don't want the high frame rates, dude, 160 gigabyte CF Express Type A card, it's like $340-something. Oh,
those are so expensive.
It's very expensive. So if you want to stick to a very fast SD card, which you're probably using with the GH5 or whatever you have now, you could still go ahead and start using those. And when you're ready to bump it up, you know where to go. But it's amazing that Sony gave us the option.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's super genius. I think, I haven't seen it before anywhere else. So it's, if you wanted another sort of recording media on it, you'd have to, like in most cameras, you have to do it on a monitor, on a recorder, like a Ninja 5 or something.
I think that, you're not going to need to record externally if you want. Yeah. But damn, this, like, if you need more than 600 megabits, recording rate, I mean, you could do it for a bigger project if you want to, if you're going to give it to a colorist to do their thing, but
there really isn't a need unless you just want ProRes,
interested to see what that 16 bit raw output looks like. There's nothing can record it right now, but I'm pretty sure Atomos is going to come out with some sort of update to record that, but I'm very interested to see that.
Tell me more about that, because I haven't read much about that.
Yeah, man. 16-bit raw output onto a Shogun recorder or a Ninja V recorder.
That's crazy.
It's gonna be phenomenal. And I'm pretty maybe you can record that. Maybe you can turn that into a Blackmagic RAW with their Video Assist monitor, which needs a new name. But whatever. it looks terrible. But anyways, I think that, so 16 bit, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it comes with more dynamic range. I'm not sure. More flexibility in post, I'm pretty sure. But I'm interested to see what the heck that looks like.
That could be very useful for VFX if you're working on.
Yeah.
With bigger pipelines on it,
and also and stuff. It has a full size HDMI jack, which is a very welcomed addition there, which is awesome.
I've been spoiled with that on my GH5, on the GH5S. They've had that for a while, so it's like I'm like, okay, good.
The R5 and R6 have micro. I think that the regular R had, a mini, and they downgraded it to a micro, which is funny.
Hold on, let me look that up. Sorry.
Yeah, no, look it up.
But that's crazy. What would they like
go? Do a fact check on me. Go ahead.
fact check. Fake news.
One of the cool other benefits here is the hot shoe mount. How you're able to connect a dedicated mic with an on-camera mic through the hot right. shoe mount, no cables. And that can go to track 1 and 2 for stereo audio for the ambience. And if you have that audio, the audio unit, you can still use the XLRs for tracks 3 and 4. And nice. That's something that I was disappointed at in the past with the FS7, that you couldn't do that, or the FS5. But here they added it, which is fantastic.
That's really good. That's like,
dude, this is a cinema super well, cinema level camera. Like, I can see this camera, given that the picture is going to be up to standard, this will be my main video camera for all my projects, unless they're specifically asking for the FS7.
Yeah. No, I would never see a problem with that. I mean, it's made so that apart from, like, I think the only thing that would make this the perfect camera would be having some internal ND.
Internal ND would be nice.
That's it. I think it's the only thing that's missing, but yeah, man. I'm excited for it. And honestly, this might be something I pick up down the road, unless, like, I was talking to a friend, I was telling him, man, unless Blackmagic comes out with an intermedium between like the Pocket and the new Ursa Mini.
You don't have any of the Pocket cameras, right?
Nah, I was thinking about it for a while. I was like, but you know what?
I remember, like, you're back and forth on that.
Yeah, because I wasn't going to spend... You have to rig them out. You have to be able to use them fully. And it's like, you know what?
Yeah, you're not just buying a camera, man. You're buying a lot of accessories to go with that camera. And you do have a lot of options. Those options are not cheap. So it's a great camera, but you need a lot of things to really make it fully functional, you know?
Yeah. I want them to make just that move, like, kind of like Sony did, where, like, they had the FS7 and the A7S II, and then came the FS5. I want that. I want the intermedium, that, you know, the Ursa Micro.
you know what's crazy, though? What's crazy here is that the FS5, the FS7, the FX9, or the Sony Venice don't even have 4K 120.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Did you not? Isn't that crazy? None of those cameras have 4K 120.
Well, they are a little older. What, the F3 or...
The Sony Venice, bro.
The Venice. How old is the Venice?
The FX9 just came out.
Oh, you said FX9 in there? Oh, my God. FX9. No way. FX9 doesn't have 120? 4K 120?
4K 60, brother.
Oh, my God.
Look it up. Do a fact check.
That's crazy. No. That I believe you. I'm still trying to find the HDMI thing here.
Anyway. Oh man, the FX9 touts 4K up to 60 frames per second. I'm looking at it right here. Regular HD recording at up to 120 frames per second.
Wow.
This is a $11,000 camera, man. Not enough. All right. Let's go to the
$3,500 is. Sorry, I lost you there for a second. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, I think you're breaking up.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Sorry, hold on.
It's all good.
Is that better?
Yeah.
I can hear you clean. I just your video froze. Anyways. Yeah, fact check you on that. You're right about the HDMI port. That's crazy.
All right, so check this out. Do you know the dynamic range on the A7S III?
I haven't. No, I'm not sure. Was it 15, like 14 or something?
15. Plus stops.
15 plus.
Do you know what the dynamic range of the Sony Venice is?
I'm going to say 12.
15 plus stops.
Oh, damn.
Did you know that after spending, look, what first of all, what does it mean on a website when you're about to purchase something, but it doesn't show you the price? And it says, you have to call them for the price. What does that mean? Because it's that crazy expensive.
Yeah, because it's super expensive.
Yeah. So I think it's something like $16,000, $15,000, something like that for the Venice.
Yeah.
And it says supports 6K capture with the license update. Okay. And if you want to get the raw, you know, recorder unit, it's another $7,000.
Dear Lord.
And if you want to shoot 7, raw,
7,000?
No, I'm sorry. Let me correct. That's their version of the recorder. But if you want to output raw, it's a $2,500 extension unit to output it to like a Shogun Inferno or something.
Okay.
Sony just gave a big middle finger to all of their other products.
That's the thing. It's weird. I don't know how, what the logic behind a company that does that is, right? Like, here's our big guys, and then our little guys, we're going to give everything. I don't know what that logic is.
Yeah.
But in my eyes, it's almost like it's okay, because now you know what's coming for the big ones. There should be more coming for the newer big ones.
I don't know, man, because the little ones get the little ones get updated way more.
This is true.
The little ones get. How long did the FX9 come out after the FS7?
It's like another like
what, like they don't, yeah they, no dude the FS7 Four? Dude
five.
The FX, first of all, the Venice, the 6K, the Venice 6K is in the Sony Alta line, Cine Alta line.
Cine Alta. Mm-hmm.
So this is an update from the F9, F55 line. How old are those cameras?
Those are old.
Incredibly old.
Yeah.
So the FS7 and the FX9, the FX9 is an update from the FS7, right?
Right.
The FS7 came out in, I'm sorry, this is the Mark II. The Mark II came out, which was really not really an update. Let me see the... it's not here. The FS7 came out like, what, 6 years ago?
I'm going to say probably like 6 or 7 years ago, probably.
Right. So it came out a very long time ago, and it took this long for the FX9 to come out. They don't get updated that frequently.
Yeah,
it's these mirrorless cameras that are getting updated all the time.
Yeah, I mean, since they're consumer based, they gotta sell more. So it's just here's the next thing. Their clientele, obviously, for the big ones is much smaller, and I don't know. I guess it does keep the pro customer satisfied as for a long time, I guess. I'm not sure.
Man,
I mean,
I just don't think that there's a, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's a slower science. I don't know if that technology moves slower. But, I mean, I don't see why, if you have it in a small camera, you can't have it in a big camera, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to see how they justify that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot there that we're not understanding, but.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm saying. There's probably a lot of R&D behind a lot of. I don't know. Well, maybe it's more expensive to make a bigger one.
To be fair, I did mention the fact that, you know, the lack of on the Venice. It does on the $15,000-$16,000 camera. It doesn't have the 120. It doesn't have. It has the same exact dynamic range. However, I'm not trying to compare those two sensors. Like, there's a reason why.
Oh, for sure.
The sensor is completely different. You have way more range in that color. Like, whatever they do there scientifically, I'm not sure, you know, what goes on behind the scenes there. But I would take the Venice sensor over this sensor any day, you know? But anyways, it's... let's go back to the A7S III. But man, it's just remarkable how they've been able to just pack all this stuff in here. So the viewfinder, according to YouTubers, it's hard to put this on video, but the viewfinder is the best viewfinder in the market right now for any mirrorless camera. It's like looking outside of a window. It's like, it's super immersive. It's very big, according to them. It's nice and bright. You could really see a clear image. The autofocus here is eye tracking autofocus, face detection autofocus. Like it's super fast.
I saw Gerald and Dunn's auto tracking. How, because he was complaining. It was like a thing before with the A7S II and A7 III, I think, where if you went below, I don't know, X amount of stops, maybe if you underexposed two stops or something below what you were, if you made your image too dark, it would lose the track, even by just two stops, where it wasn't like pitch black or anything. And if you went over two stops, it lost the face track. But now you see him like really like underexposing it, like where you can barely see a hint of the person.
He went five stops.
It's crazy. And then it's still tracking and then overexposed as well. That's impressive, man.
That's very so impressive. Cool. I mean, if you're under and over or overexposed by that much, I mean, better be careful.
And the auto track feature that it has too, where obviously you can set the range of the speed in which it autofocuses.
Yeah.
And then he did something really cool where you can focus on the LCD screen by touch, but then you could almost like lock it to, and then you can make it identify this object and that object, and then you could just have it like focus between those the whole time. It's incredible. I don't even know. I can't remember. I have to look at it again. He talks so fast sometimes, but really impressed by that.
He's very informative.
Yeah,
very very informative. But am I missing anything here? That it's just so many, like,
I don't know. Like I said, I feel like so much deliciousness. Like sit down for like another 2 hours and really like, because I mean, I told you, I'm just coming around to like reading up on it and seeing the news. But it looks like there's so much, which is a good thing.
It's just it's just so delicious. it has an SNQ mode. I'm not sure if that was on the A7 III. I didn't use the A7 III that much, or barely at all. So I can't remember if it still has that. But man, I'm super excited for. This is gonna be the longest 2 months of my life.
In 2 months, that's when it comes out.
That's when it starts shipping. I don't know when I'm gonna get it, but
that's true.
We'll see.
You don't have any Sony glass, right? Any E-mount?
I do, not for full frame though, I don't think.
Yeah, that's my only thing.
No.
You have to put like an adapter on it.
Well, according to I forgot who said that the autofocus is supposed to be the same. I think it was my friend Julian Jari, but I don't know if he was referring to this camera or the A7 III. I think he's talking about the A7 III, but he did say that with the Sigma MC11 adapter, using his Sigma glass, the autofocus was, there's no difference. It's that fast.
Really?
And that's crazy. I was very impressed. I've never seen it that fast with me, but I think maybe I can test it with the A6600 here that I have, which, by the way, I'm going to sell. I can't keep this camera.
Just toss it.
Because once I get this, that's gonna be just toss it.
Yeah, there's no point. There's no point even like.
Oh man, if there's anyone listening here that wants to buy this, I used it. I've used it like 3 times, it's gotta go.
It's can't. Not that bad. If you're starting out, it's a good camera.
It's just no. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic camera. I just can't see myself using it with, you know, having the A7S III.
Yeah,
for sure. You know?
Yeah, you wouldn't have a need at all.
Yeah, there's no need. But I'm super excited about this. Anything else that you wanted to mention on this camera?
No, I mean, I was looking at, I was going to talk about the IBIS and.
Man, I totally forgot about that.
Because I saw Potato Jet talking about the IBIS and then how he tried to pair it up with. Actually, was it IBIS? There's. electronic and lens stabilization. So if you have a stabilized lens, it's almost like a perfect like scenario. But he was saying that there is something with when you put IBIS or and the electronic, and the lens stabilization, that you do get some sort of crop. Or I don't know what mode is it. It's in. It's like in a 4K mode. When you get IBIS, it's like a 1.1 time crop or something like that.
I think that is in 120 though.
120. Okay.
If you're that shooting in 120.
Yeah, which is totally fine with me, to be honest. Like,
I mean, I forgive you. Forgive them.
1.1 crop.
Yeah.
For IBIS at 120 frames per second, I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's it says it minimizes the appearance of the camera shake by 5.5 stops, which I'm not sure what that translates to. But apparently everything has stops. When did that start happening?
yeah, I don't know. How do you measure that?
Don't know how do they measure that. But it's super exciting. I'm very eager to continue to watch all the other videos that come out following this release. I'm very impressed with Sony. They freaking did it, man. We're that much closer to the perfect camera.
For real. And they knew, I think they know they had it. It's just like,
I wonder how long they were sitting on this before they decided to release it.
Yeah. I mean, they knew, I mean, I guess they were just testing the waters, like reading, you know.
NAB was going to take place in April. Were they going to announce it then?
I don't know. It's like months away from April. That's, you know, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe they were still going to test the waters in NAB, see what people really wanted or not, you know. Just, I think they did the right, I think the wait was worth it, to be honest. Because
the 5 years? They nailed it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, would they have been able to do this like 3 years ago? You know, think about it.
I think one of the things that a lot of people are very happy about is the fact that there is no crop in the 4K shooting modes. Yeah. I think maybe a slight one when you get to 120. But that's maybe if you're using the image stabilization.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But there's no crop 4K 120. I mean, 4K 2430 60, I think.
The 240 at 1080 also looks really nice. I don't know if you saw Potato Jets.
Yeah, I saw that. There's a 1080.
You obviously, 1080, you, 240, yeah.
Yeah. It's
very particular use.
Still, man. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible what they were able to pull off here. Yeah. But,
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm excited to see what's coming. I'm excited to see what other companies, you know, retaliate with, because it's going to drive a lot of people. Yeah.
I'm excited to see what Panasonic comes out with soon.
You know that GH6, I hope it's full frame though.
No, they already have their full frame lines, the S1H and whatnot.
I know.
I don't think anyone's going to be messing with I mean, they could if the price is right, for the right price. I mean, just yesterday I was considering the GH5 again.
Yeah.
I was fine with the Super Micro Four Thirds sensor.
Yeah. No, but, it doesn't bug me. It's just like, you know.
But again, like, it's because I haven't shot in full frame in so long, so I don't remember the benefit of it, you know?
For sure. Yeah.
Now I want to see. I think this is going to spoil the crap out of me.
Oh, for sure. No, you're done. I don't think you're going back, though.
I don't.
After this, no.
No, man. And I might even, I mean, maybe I won't buy two of them. I'll just stick to the one and maybe rent. Yeah. If one of my buddies around has one, I'll just rent it from them if I need to do a two-camera shoot.
I think you're going to have this one for a while, to be honest. I think and honestly, if I was getting it now too, it would probably last me a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
I would probably upgrade for a while, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine how long it's going to be when we see the A7S IV?
Yeah. I mean, this might be a you're right. This might be a camera I pick up like next year, you know, after just, you know, shipping normally.
Yeah.
But But yeah, man, because it's still like $3,500 is still, it's not that it's cheap, but it's not that it's expensive, sorry, because there are more expensive cameras in, you know, in that mirrorless range. But yeah, man, it's totally affordable for what it does, and it's exciting. And I'm just, that's why I'm excited to see, you know, what Panasonic does next, what, you know, what Zoic does next.
Yeah, man. Super, super excited, man. Dude, thanks so much for coming on the episode and talking about this. This is very exciting.
Always love to talk about stuff.
Yeah. Always about this. I'm sure we'll be continuing to this conversation through text or social media or whatnot. So
for sure.
But anyways, thanks for coming on, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
So there you have it. That's my conversation with Fernando Gomez on all these cameras that were released on this month of July. I hope you enjoyed it. If you found value in this episode, would you go ahead and give us a 5-star review over on iTunes? We definitely appreciate it. It helps us with the rankings and the ratings and searchability for people that are also trying to find us, and share this with a friend. Maybe they would get a kick out of it as well. We definitely appreciate that. If you want to know more information, you can follow us over at iFilmmaker Podcast on Instagram. My Instagram is at Ariel Martinez Films, and we can talk there. If you guys have any questions regarding this episode or any other episode on our podcast, on our platform, and we'll see you on the next episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast. See ya.